Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Helicopters thumping in the heavy jungle night, troopers hanging outward, straining for a fight. The night is ever present as you listen for that sound of tracers arcing skyward, trying to knock you down. Your hair is standing on its end as that Huey starts to flare, and jungle boots scrambling, jumping into air. You slap the ground still running, listening for that yell, the old man screaming, "Spread it out, you're gonna get shot to hell." You run from hooch to bunker, you're searching for the man. The radio's crackling, "Bravo 6, let's get this mother in the can. We've got 27 wounded and a dust off on the way. Get a team to LZ Hank or that bird ain't gonna stay." Your arms are getting tired from pumping shotgun rounds. All you really want to do is lay down on the ground, but you know you can't. At least not now, because your team is running mad. Get that team to LZ Hank or that dust off ship.
And I guess we lost the last of it. Well, the last stanza is, "The quiet finally settled in the tropic jungle night. 14 of our troopers died in that bloody village fight. You kick on back, the Hueys are coming. You know that's something new. A smile plays across your grimy face. God damn, I made it through. So the way we lived and fought and died was something new to me, but I learned real fast in B-19 of the U.S. Cavalry." So there's your B-19, Claire.
Very interesting. I've never heard that before.
That's because I wrote it.
Did you just write that recently?
No, I wrote that in 1983, actually.
Oh. Very nice.
Yeah, a friend of mine said, "Why don't you write something about your experiences?" So I just picked a night air assault we went on and did it on that. So anyway, welcome back to the Writer's Block. This is Jim Christina, your host, right here on LA Talk Radio's very own Writer's Block. And Bobby Jean Bell, are you with us tonight? Because we have having problems with you.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
I just can't see you.
Well, that's okay. I don't know, technology. I have no clue, but I'm happy to be here.
I'm a technology idiot. So I can't figure anything out anymore. I just forget it. Forget about it. Go back to the old way of doing things. Tin cans and strings. That way I can figure it out. I can't hear you. Tighten the string. There you go. Anyway, we have a very interesting guest tonight. It's quite a story getting her on this show. Claire, her name is Claire Nolan. She does a lot. I'm going to have her kind of clue you in as to what her total functions are in life. But she co-wrote a book with a gentleman named Steve Maloney called Huey, Take Me Home. It's the written book of the film that was actually made of Steve is an artist, and he got together with some groups and picked up this old derelict Huey that had been shot down in Vietnam in 1967 as Huey number 174. And they go picked it up and they brought it back and they used it for parts, and they finally just junked it. And they got the hold of this bird and they put it back together piece by piece, dug bullets out of the skeleton, dug bullets out of the body. I mean, they completely refurbished this bird to not fly, but to look like a Huey. They painted it, and they painted it with everything imaginable on it. And I'll have Claire kind of explain that to you if she would. But it traveled to the United States, and I guess it finally – correct me if I'm wrong, Claire. I think the traveling quit in 2017. Is that correct?
Yes. So it was on tour. It went to 13 or so states between 2015 and 2017.
Right. And the first thing they did with this derelict is they put it on new skids. And then they put the names of the crew chief and the medic, because Huey 174 was a medevac chopper. And they put the names of the medic and the crew chief that had died in the crash and the shootdown, put them on the skids. So if you see this bird, I mean, it's on permanent display now. If you go look at it, you can see their names. And then Steve actually went to the Vietnam War and found their names on the panel. And it was kind of, I'm sure, special for him. The reason this took the longest time to get Claire on with us is Steve passed away, I believe, before the book was actually published, or just as the book was being finished. And the family was having a hard time getting permission to have Claire come in and talk about the book, because, of course, it was Steve's project. And Claire came in, you know, halfway through the writing process. And, whoa, somebody's ghosts are moving things. So, please welcome to the writer's block. And I'm just going to let Claire talk a little bit about this project. Miss Claire Nolan.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's great having you. As I said earlier, things, you know, live radio things happen, and boy, they are happening tonight. So, that's okay. We'll get through it.
Where would you like me to start?
Why don't we start with your participation in the book, because you weren't part of the movie at all. But Steve, I understand he was there for the presentation of the Emmy, and it did win an Emmy.
Okay, why don't we back up, and I'll tell you the story of the project. So Steve was a contemporary artist. He was a successful businessman who gave up the business world to become a professional artist in the early 90s, and he excelled at contemporary art. He created very energetic artworks. He called them mixed media artworks, and they reflected that 60s sensibility, Andy Warhol and Klaus Oldenburg and artists like that. And he tended to do light, happy works. He was a man who wanted people to enjoy life, and that was reflected in his artwork. But in 2012, he heard about the program that Congress had approved called the 50th Anniversary Commemoration of the Vietnam War. And as someone whose contemporaries had fought in Vietnam, Steve had served in the National Guard but had not been called up overseas, he really wanted to do something. It really had stuck in his mind that veterans from Vietnam had received a terrible reception, and he really felt that he could do something. And, I tip my hat to him because, you know, as a contemporary artist who really wanted to make lively, energetic pieces, to take on a memorial sculpture was quite a job. And he had done a helicopter sculpture before. So he decided the Huey was a great top, you know, great subject, since he had transformed a helicopter into a work of art previously, and the Huey was so symbolic of Vietnam. And that led to, as you just described, the creation of the recreation of the finding of the sculpture and transforming it. And then he took it on the road, and meanwhile, he made a documentary film about it. And then as that process was winding down, he decided he wanted to create a book to memorialize the whole experience, because it all took off much more than he ever expected, mm-hmm. Including, as you mentioned, the film winning an Emmy, a local Los Angeles Emmy Award.
Yeah, that's just amazing. I mean, I read the book cover to cover. Of course, being a Vietnam veteran, it really interested me to see what these boys and men did and the people that he had working on this helicopter as they were getting ready to get it painted and they put it on the trailer. I mean, the kids, the high school kids, reskinning this old warbird. And it's just amazing to watch, and it was amazing to read about. And I just really appreciated the fact that, gee, somebody remembered us, you know. So,
can I
go ahead, Bobby?
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
Claire, we've been doing this show. What are we going on 6 years, Jim? We're like episode 300 and something. And today was the first day that I wept. This book was so moving, and I don't have a personal connection to this war. In my family or personally, I grew up with it, but it just shook me to my core as I finished it today. And I think it's a remarkable story, not only Steve and how, you know, his background's so interesting. He was into so many things. He had a menswear store at one time, you know. Right. His own journey, so very interesting. And then the research, he did a lot of research, every single component that was put on that 174 was so thoughtfully chosen. And I think at some point he must have realized it was sort of bigger than him, that it was to speak to the Vietnam vet and family. And it's a remarkable project, just remarkable. And it touched so many lives, as Jim was saying, in just the beginning of the process. And then when you see right to the end with the motorcades and the parades and just a remarkable story. Remarkable.
I mean, his previous sculpture, I had to chuckle as he was as we were going through the previous sculpture he did with the OH-58, the Bell Jet Ranger. And then he had with the engine cowling off and a saddle on it, and then longhorns on the nose. I thought, holy man, now that is cool.
Yeah, that's a little like Nudie, the, you know, Hollywood Taylor that tricked out all those cars. It's sort of like the two outlets in Palm Desert.
And then, he
wanted to take it as far as he could take it.
He did.
I thought the saddle and the engine cowling was, I mean, that was like, that was that was it. That was the epitome of art. It didn't belong there, but it did belong there.
But it did. It's sort of like with the Huey putting the mule bags up on top and the speakers.
Right.
And I think, I guess, Claire, I'd love you to just touch a little bit on PTSD and how this art project has also impacted veterans that way.
And before we do that, Bobby, we need to take a real quick break.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So Claire, stay with us, please. Bobby, hang tough. Please don't disappear again. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is The Writer's Block. And we'll be back right after this real short word from LA Talk Radio.
Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says be a host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say, and if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com, and listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for The Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back with our guest tonight. It's Claire Nolan and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell. If we could ever, I don't think she's really here. I think she's phoning it in. Anyway, if you want to call and talk to our guest tonight, that was dumb. I actually have the correct number tonight, Bobby. The number is 323-203-0815. Write it down, as Bobby used to say. And if you want to call and talk to Claire, she's sitting right here looking at me, or looking at the screen. The number here is 1-5. Okay, now, PTSD.
Well, Steve did get, I mean, Bobby mentioned the research he did, and as he was, you know, starting to conceive the project, there were a lot of reports back. This is really at the height of, one of the heights of the American combat in Afghanistan. And there were a lot of reports about suicide among veterans. And Steve really became interested in the topic, and that became part of his research. And then as he met the Vietnam vets who helped him with the sculpture, you know, he realized that, you know, this isn't just an immediate effect of combat. I mean, PTSD can last for decades, and mm-hmm. there are some Vietnam veterans who still suffer from PTSD. So raising awareness of PTSD became a real part of the project. And that, I think the name, Take Me Home, Huey, is the name of the sculpture and the documentary and the book. And that idea of coming home is, he wanted to send that soothing message of care and respect, knowing of that, you know, the difficult transition that a lot of Vietnam vets had and PTSD. And then as the sculpture toured around, his studio, you know, helped him invite veterans groups. So they often had veterans groups on hand at the locations to talk to vets who came to see the sculpture and help them with services if they needed it, or steer them in the direction of help if they needed help with PTSD or with other issues. Mm-hmm. So that was a big part of the project as well. And I can go into, there's another dimension, which is this idea of art as a therapy and a catalyst for the conversations that can lead veterans to healing. Another dimension of the project was this realization that the art opened up avenues for veterans to interact, to start discussing their experience. And that's really the first step to getting therapy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I read one veteran telling him that we all came home with PTSD. Just it was just a measure of how much and how bad it was in some people. Some people emotionally stayed in Vietnam, even though they were home. I know personally quite a few people who wound up with that, and they wound up, some of them wound up in psych hospitals, and some of them wound up in therapy for years. PTSD is not anything to mess around with, because it's virulent. It comes at you and it just doesn't want to go away. It's like a demon that gets inside of you and doesn't want to leave. Mm-hmm. So it's a horrible, horrible thing to go through.
Yeah, I mean, there are successful treatments for some. 50% of patients who've gone through, there are three therapies that have been scientifically tested, you know, gone through clinical trials and everything. And so I don't want anyone listening to feel hopeless. There are avenues for help. I mean, with Vietnam, it is a particularly devastating story, and I think we learned a lot of lessons from it, in that the veterans who came home, you know, they didn't receive a great reception, can be a contributing factor to PTSD, but then it also wasn't even recognized as a mm-hmm. condition. Right. It wasn't really until the 80s that right. the psychiatric profession really defined it and learned how to diagnose it and realize that it, I mean, everyone thinks it's psychological, but it can be physiological as well. I mean, your blood pressure will literally rise. And so it's still not well understood. But hopefully there is a chapter in the book that explains all this. And
right.
for me, it was one of the more interesting things to write about. I learned a lot doing that, which is.
Well, I have to. I have to mention also, this is a rather large coffee table book. And it is chock full of very interesting photos and personal remembrances and poems. And songs, and it's just all kinds of things in here that just really grab your attention. And I'm so glad that you guys decided to do this book and did it and has it out. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful piece. So kudos.
I mean, I really enjoyed doing the photo editing. I'm proud, very proud of. Steve and I went through all his photos, and then with the aid of our photo researcher, who is also an editor, Nicole Teutsch-Buscher, we selected 180 photographs that cover not just the history of the project, but also the war. Mm-hmm. There is a chapter on war memorials and where, if you're into art, where Take Me Home, Huey fits into Art of the War Memorial. There's many dimensions to the book, and it's reflected in the photos.
Yeah, there's a couple real good close-ups of the pilot's door, and on that door there's units painted. The Alpha Bravo Charlie troop of 1st and 9th Cav is on there, and my unit was the Bravo troop of 1st and 9th Cav. And 1st and 9th, of course, 1st Squadron, 9th Cavalry, and 1st Cavalry Division. And it's just amazing. That brings back so much. Just looking at that helicopter sitting on that trailer, just it brought back just immediately so much. And I even went to flight school after Vietnam and flew those damn Hueys.
Reading the description of what a pilot went through,
especially
under the under the duress of the circumstance. I don't know how they were able to train 40,000 pilots. Oh. Just trying to figure out like what the hands had to be doing and what they were thinking about, and you know how they had to get so low, and the trees are right there. And I thought, oh my gosh, the descriptions in this book were, as I say. Thank you for the book, because even if we could see the sculpture, everything else that's covered in the book just gives the whole piece life. I thought it was so interesting, the chapter at the kind of towards the end, which is all the historical about the other monuments that you talked about, and even Civil War monuments, and just so, you know, it just capsulized a lot of U.S. history in this book. It's our cultural and history documented in a really unique way that's very personal and very touchable.
Extremely. Did you ever get a chance to ride in a Huey?
I rode in a Huey with the Marines in 20 some years ago. I was an associate producer on a series for the Discovery Channel, and we went down to film with the Marines in Camp Lejeune. Oh. And I flew it in a formation of Hueys. And I just remember how that description, I mean, one of the men we interview says that it's like it's a bucket of bolts. It's teeth rattling, right? I mean, your brain is moving around inside your skull.
It shakes you to death. Shake you to death.
They were meant to, I mean, they just made them, you know, they cranked them out. I don't know how they made 7,000 served over there. And they were making them fast, and they were making them light. The pilots sat on their chest armor because there was no armor. I mean,
there's
now
no armor seats.
You know, the Black Hawk was armored and has so much survivability compared to the Huey. It was bullets went right through it.
Well, we used to sit on our helmets in the back because the bullets could come right through the PSP floor.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh my gosh!
It was an incredible bird, though. But you know, it reminds me so much of a B-17, because a Huey rattled as they were and loud and cranky and sometimes didn't fire up. And just, I mean, they were just like, there was just a pain in the ass. But you know what? You could hardly knock them down. They could take so many hits and still fly. I virtually was on one day that the chip lights, everything that could go wrong with that helicopter was going wrong. I mean, they took rounds in the transmission, they took rounds in the engine, and it still stayed in the air until we got into 21st of Vecchia and the engine seized on the runway.
Oh my gosh.
And the bird, the main rotor had froze and flipped the helicopter over on its side.
Oh my God.
But it was like, it got us home. Take me home, Huey.
Take me home, Huey. Well, and I would imagine, Jim, your memory that you're sharing with us right now, this has to be part of what was pouring out of folks as they saw it or touched it. You see some of the fabulous photos where they're touching it and, you know, you just feel exactly what you just described.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it's you know, being in combat with a helicopter when they're flying at 4,000 or 5,000 feet and they go in on an air assault and all of a sudden they just start spiraling in. Virtually less than a minute, they go from 5,000 feet to ground level. It's just a big spiral. And if you aren't throwing up by the time they start, you were definitely throwing up by the time you get on the ground, because it's so dizzying. But those pilots were just amazing.
Amazing.
They were amazing.
Yeah.
Which is why I went to flight school. But then I found out my PTSD didn't come from combat. It came from flight school. And if you were a combat veteran in flight school, they just rode you like a bad bitch. They really did.
Oh, really? I would have thought the opposite. But,
nope.
My understanding is they rode everyone pretty hard. Even the Air Force Academy grads were scrubbing toilets and that. Vietnam.
Well, you know, everybody, even officers, warrant officer candidates and officers, and everybody got the same treatment. And you know, you'd be bracing the wall with a second lieutenant or a captain or a first lieutenant, you know, all in flight school, and they just, you know, everybody be bracing up the wall. So yeah, it was not a fun time. It was 10 months of hell. Is what it was.
Wow.
Anyway, this is such a wonderful, wonderful book, and I am just so proud to be able to talk to you about it. And I was so proud to see the work that had gone into it, and to see the artwork. Oh my God, the artwork of this helicopter is phenomenal. I don't know who did the painting on it, but holy mackerel, it's wonderful. And you know, the little touches, like Bobby had mentioned, the duffel bags on the yaks cowling on the roof. Yeah. You know, take me home. All right, let's go.
Yep.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, and he was in the book. They were saying that the baggage up on top was, you know, it also could mean that, you know, the baggage that you bring home with you, that's the soul baggage, you know. I think there's just so much thought that went into this and how different people would relate to it. I read one gentleman said, when he saw the bags there, he went right back to some smells he hadn't thought of in forever. And I think that's good art. Any art that touches people in any number of ways is good art. It's great art.
A number of veterans said that they had different senses were activated by the helicopter, whether it was smell or some could hear it, and even though it was sitting on the ground, and others, it had that effect. It's one of the reasons, I mean, Steve wanted to turn it into a multimedia project, so that he commissioned a song, the Take Me Home Huey song, and then the film to capture all of that, those reactions. He commissioned the documentary as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I found that very interesting too. It seems like that might be unique to the combat experience. It was certainly shared by many of the veterans who saw the artwork.
Well, you know, when I first saw the really good side picture, I mean, the where you saw the whole helicopter on the trailer, when I first saw that one picture, the thing that popped into my brain was an old Animal song, "We Got to Get Out of This Place."
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I can remember everybody used to hum that and sing that. And you know, if we'd get half drunk in the NCO club at night, and, you know, in the rear, everybody be singing that out loud. "We got to get out of this place." You know?
Well, and the song is incredibly powerful. I was on the website today, takemehomehuey.org, and found that, you know, the way to get to the link to watch the recording of the song. And the song is, we have the lyrics in the book, but the song is, it just fits perfectly with this whole project. Just fabulous.
Yeah, the composer is Jeannie Cunningham, and from Palm Springs. She's had a long recording career. Yeah, she did a great job with it.
Mm-hmm.
She and Steve both, I should say. I mean, well, they worked together.
Yeah,
everybody involved in this project did a wonderful job. It was just a wonderful. It's a wonderful project. It really, truly is. And I think it's the first time. Since let's say I came home in December of 71, I think it's the first time that anybody really has said "welcome home" and meant it,
mm-hmm.
which meant a lot. And I'm sure it means a lot to a lot of people.
Well, that was the primary mission. That was the first thing when Steve heard about the commemoration and his mind went to the poor welcome home and the stories he heard about protests greeting his contemporaries when they returned from the war. And he, that was his thing. Like, how can I give them this welcome home that they never had 40 years ago? And it was so striking to me. I mean, he really understood so much intuitively about what had gone on and how, as an artist, he could help. Because he, as we were doing the research, we learned from psychiatrists that about, you know, I mentioned this earlier, that the welcome home that veterans can receive, the social support they get on the home front, can affect whether they develop full-blown PTSD and, you know, how bad it gets. And, you know, I feel like he knew that, even though, you know, he didn't know the scientific literature at the time, but he just had that sense and that how important that message would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the one thing this book does, I'm absolutely, and the band, the movie, is I'm absolutely certain that it's gotten people talking, and you know, it's a good conversation. And it's, you know, the conversations with veterans and non-veterans and, you know, it's finally put a dialogue together where people actually can sit down and talk about it. Instead of pretending it never happened, you know, it's like, what was the line in the movie, Bobby? It was, you probably didn't watch it. It was a Rambo movie.
Oh, no.
And you know, there was one line in there that really grabs you. And his colonel says, "Well, what is it you want, John?" And he said, "I just want them to love us as much as we love our country."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, that fits just perfectly. And we know that this project, just from a couple of examples, did help bring some closure to some folks that had been the crew that had survived that February 14th.
Right.
Who just, you know, the few that survived were always asking themselves, what could I have done differently? That type of thing. And for them to have found, those three gentlemen to have found, two of them found each other fairly early on. And then the third one, it came on board. I think that's right. Dave Adams. Yeah. Anyway, that's such a powerful story that after all these years, these three gentlemen would still be here. And then be able to find each other,
right.
and I think have some element of closure. That's what a gift, you know. What a gift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. You know what? Let's take a real quick break here, and then we'll come back. We're only going to do two commercials tonight. So this is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we'll be back right after this real brief word from Out West.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
And boy, that was an abrupt end, but that's okay.
I know it does. It does end pretty quick. 30 seconds.
And we are back with our guest Claire Nolan. And if you want to call and talk to Claire, of course, I have the correct number. It's 323-203-0815. You can call, and our kindly engineer will put you in contact with Claire, and you can say howdy and whatever it is you want to say to her. Claire, let's talk a little bit about you, because I know you've got a plethora of things that you've done in your life. You've been a producer and a businesswoman, and you certainly didn't start out as a writer of the coffee table book. So
no, this is the first book that I've written, so I'm grateful to Steve for bringing me on board and giving me that experience. I have worked in television most of my life. Oh, well, I should say, actually, that's not entirely true, because I'm a journalist, began my career as a journalist, but went into long form television journalism. And I also have done basic reporting for digital as well. But I, early in my career, I worked at 60 Minutes. I then went and produced and directed documentaries for Discovery. And then I spent a long time at National Geographic. So I've done lots of films that have aired globally on those networks. And it's been great fun. But I've written a great deal of television as well. So oh. I had experience writing, doing quite a bit of writing before I took on this project.
Well, I mean, you know, writing scripts and stuff for writing stuff for television, it's got to be a lot different than sitting down and writing prose in a book. You know, it's got to be different.
Yes, it is. It's you have a clock to hit, which you don't as you know, on radio. I mean, you gotta fit everything within the time allotted.
Right.
And it obviously much of what your story is ideally is in your visuals. So your writing is meant to only enhance that, not to repeat it. So
sure.
it is very different.
Sure. Yeah, you're not constrained.
But I've been at this
time for
a while, so I like to think I can cross over.
Yeah, I mean, writing a book or writing, you know, even a I don't even know what you kind of call this book. It's kind of almost like a documentary book. I don't even know what class you
put it in. It's an art book.
I'm sorry.
It's an art book.
Okay.
An art book.
You're not constrained by time limits, you know, or content, you know. As long as you're on a roll and you keep putting on, you know, stuff on the page that looks good to everybody, well, then, you know, it's no big deal. But you're not writing for an hour show. So yeah, I see. It had to have been tough for you to kind of switch gears.
It's liberating in a way, and the great thing about this project was that Steve also hired a professional editor. Bernard Ohanian was and he's a veteran of National Geographic as well. He edited our prose and gave us lots of input and encouragement, and so it was great to have him as a, you know, cushion to to know that if I, you know, was really wandering off. But I will say that, I mean, because you have to be so concise for TV, I think it helps. I mean, now with digital and you being able to edit and write, you know, people, you can go on, and books are like 1,000 pages now. And you pick up a book, you're like, it's 1,000 pages. When am I going to have time to read this?
Oh, we know that, don't we, Bobby?
Oh yes, we know that. Because we do read the book each week, and we read it. So we have had some that you know, Killers. were very long.
Yeah. So I mean, television does teach you to say it in few words. So that's right. It's good practice.
Right. It's funny you should say that, because I had a review in one of my books. I think it was Jefferson's Chance, one of my books that I wrote, and he says the author has put out the description without being flowery and overwriting the scene. Okay, I can live with that. So. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that was a compliment. Mm-hmm. You know, they got the visual, they got the scene, they got everything they needed, and they didn't have to go through 15 pages to get a half a page scene. So, yeah, I could do that, and I assume it's kind of like what you were working with.
Yeah, and in that, I mean, I'm a Hemingway fan, or at least of his prose, not of his not of the man necessarily, but he. In that Ken Burns documentary, he describes that labor of just trying to, you know, to nail it in as few as words as possible. And it's definitely a discipline in itself if you choose to go that route.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, how long did it take you guys to put this book together? You came in when the project had already started.
So Steve had done some preliminary work. He had actually decided with a publicist writer that he knew how long he wanted it to be and how long the chapters. So I actually did sort of have a word goal, or we had a word goal as we worked together. You know, we were trying to go longer than 6,000, 7,000 words in a chapter. And they'd also worked out, the different angles that they wanted to include in the story.
Right.
And he had started the biography section and I think chapter 2, which is interviews with pilots about what it was like to fly the Huey and the history of the war. So I picked up from there. I helped him do a bit of restructuring of what he already had. And then... he'd done a lot of interviews even for the latter part of the book because he had the documentary. So a lot of the material was already recorded with the crew. I did talk to one of the crew members, but we had interviews with the three surviving crewmen that he had videotaped. So I had all those transcripts. So, you know, we generally, you know, we outlined it. We went chapter by chapter. And actually didn't even go in order because of, I think we just skipped around a bit. I'm trying to remember now exactly why we did that, but we did. And, you know, I outlined things for him and he'd send his feedback and suggestions and fill in some of the blanks for me. And, then we'd polish it up, send it to the editor and then do another version after the editor looked at it.
It's really interesting as I think about it because of the power of the photos and the photos being so much a part of each of those chapters. Did you know what photos you were going to use for which chapters? And when you sent the book in for editing, did the photos go too so the editor could sort of see the whole chapter?
You know, no, we did all the photos after.
Okay.
Steve certainly knew. You know, I knew what with regard to the project, I had a good idea of what the photos were. And then having done some work on Vietnam stories, I had some, and this is where, you know, the TV background comes in. I had some idea of what historical photos would be mm-hmm. out there. Mm-hmm. But we didn't really start thinking about what was going to go where until the prose was done. And then we did. So the whole project took, you asked how long it took 2+ years to get it to the printer. Because we spent probably 6 months on the photo editing mm-hmm. and the design. So as we selected the photos, and then the layout, an art design, art book designer, mm-hmm. then did the layout, and then you know she had input too, because if the photos wouldn't hit on the right page, we had to make adjustments mm-hmm. and move things around.
It's really interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally. It amazes me. I appreciate the fact that the book is there. And I have a really good friend of mine that has developed Alzheimer's from Agent Orange in Vietnam. He was a Marine. And I told him about the book. I told his wife about it, actually. I think she bought one. So,
oh, great.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about how cognizant he is. The book is sitting on the table, but it's he sundowns about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So if you don't get him by 10 in the morning, you're pretty much done for the day. But I know a couple of veterans that I have talked to, Air Force and Army and Marines, actually, that they've told them about the book, and that we were interviewing you, and that if you get a chance, pick one of these books up, because they're not real expensive. Nope. And it's something that you certainly want to hang on to if you're a Vietnam veteran. And I think I just thank you guys so much for doing this project, both the film and I never got to see the film, and I'm trying to find a copy now. The book indeed is just wonderful, and I will cherish it forever. Well, however long I have left, day. Knows.
Well, it's been. I mean, it's certainly I'm grateful for having been able to be involved in it. I'm glad. I'm happy to hear that it's getting such a great reception.
Well, the veterans are the ones that are going to really push this book, and I can almost guarantee you that. And I hope they do, because it's part of their legacy. As Vietnam veterans, we don't have a huge legacy. We have a war that nobody cared about and nobody wanted us to be there, so it's what we have. And so if we have something that we can actually share with the public and kind of get a dialogue going, I think that's a better legacy than anything. And again, I totally appreciate the time that you guys put into it. And it's a wonderful, wonderful project. And we're very glad you did it.
So, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And unfortunately, that being said, we are out of time. Totally out of time. So we want to thank you for joining us. And I know it was a chore getting you here, but you're here. We appreciate your joining us tonight. And Bobby, anything you'd like to tell Claire before we kick her off the air?
No, let's just be sure to give the website one more time, because it's a great website. Okay. Claire, why don't you go ahead and just tell people where they can find out more?
Yeah, Claire.
You can read all about the project and order a copy of the book at the Take Me Home Huey website, which is takemehomehuey.org.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And as far as getting a hold of you personally, if you don't want anybody to, just don't tell them your email address.
Yeah, I'd rather not do that.
Okay. Right now. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I know it's late. So, but we appreciate your time and coming in and chatting with us about this project. It was wonderful. And thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your service.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
It's great talking to you, Claire. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Next Thursday, Thursday in May, we have not only do we have the wonderful, charming, indubitably wonderful man, Mr. Henry Park, with us, but we also have writer Jennifer Ann Gordon, who is like they're starting to call her the queen of the horrific. And I've read some of her book. I don't know if you have, Bobby.
I haven't yet.
Oh my God.
Gothic horror, speculative this is fiction. Be another, oh my gosh.
This one's gonna fly by. It just goes zing. Oh,
she
my
won
God.
The Kindle Award for Best Horror Suspense for 2020.
I know. And
oh gosh.
I am so excited. I'm about three chapters into it right now and it just takes off. First word, first chapter, first line, boom. Okay. Just goes.
I'll be starting it tonight.
Yeah. Oh, and again, if anybody is interested in having their books advertised on the Writer's Block, again, all you need to do is PayPal $25 to jchristina@TuscanyBayBooks. Send us the name of the book, a brief description of the book, and make sure that it's under a minute, and we'll get it on the air for you. And Last Lonely Trail. The audiobook now is out and it's available on Amazon.
Oh,
and that's the one I wrote in conjunction with Richard. It's mm-hmm. the only book that I've ever written with anyone. It was fun, but I don't know that I'd really want to do it again. I might. Who knows? But it's The Last Lonely Trail. It is out in audiobook and it's really good. I have to say, the guy who did the reading on it was really good. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Okay. Anything you got, Bobby?
I don't have anything.
Okay then. Well, I guess for Bobby Jean and Jim Bell and of course Ronan Rosner, Sam Hassan, myself, and the bookie, and throw in Russ Abbas in there if you'd like, for the Writer's Block crew, we are out of here.